A do ba do 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 ba do ba do do ba.
Hello and welcome to this edition of The Whole Shebang. I'm delightful darling daughters, Jen. Hello, Jen.
Hi, Mom.
And Caitlin. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Mom.
It's nice to hear you guys today. We have an interesting first topic, I think, this week. It's the philosophy of healthcare. Healthcare is one of the biggest dire conundrums facing our society right now, and I thought it'd be interesting to look at it from a slightly different perspective, and we have a lot of questions to ask, and I really want to hear what you guys have to say about it. But I thought I'd start out with a story that sort of got me thinking about this. When I was young, I come from a medical family, and we had a lot of medical sort of books when I was young, and I grabbed onto one by Dr. Tom Dooley, who was a physician who would go to Vietnam and Laos and treat the people there. And I would sit always reading. My sister and I shared a room. So when I wanted to read after she'd gone to bed, I'd go to the linen closet. And one of the books I read there several times was Tom Dooley's Deliver Us From Evil. And it talks about his experiences and the river of unending human suffering that he would work from dawn until dusk and later and still have lines and lines of people the next day and the next week and the next month and the next year of people needing help, a physical help. And it had a great impact upon me, this story. I wonder, you know, here we are of this world. So why do we seem to be so out of sync with it? Why are we so ill all the time? Why do we have so many problems? And why does modern medicine, for all its vaunted sophistication, particularly in America, not seem to cure some things? So some of the questions that I'd come up with, ladies, and you can answer these or add to your own or however you want to do it, but why do we need so much health care? As ants and squirrels and other things of nature seem to be okay. You don't have seemingly insurmountable, unending suffering of all sorts of medical problems with them. And as Jen suggested in a previous podcast, maybe it's not that we have more flu, but that people are just flocking to doctors more and more and more when there's really not too much a doctor can do about a flu. And the question, what is disease? Peace, as Caitlin has suggested from Taekwondo, is a sense, is not where there's no strife whatsoever. It's a balance. So we are then perhaps disease is being out of balance in some way in a micro and a macro level on an individual and a worldwide level. And then if we did cure disease, would we then have a problem of too many people? Does disease serve a purpose? And my last question is boosting the immune system. We've talked about that too. What exactly does that mean, and is that a good thing to do? So with that intro, ladies, I throw it out to you. Jen, what do you think?
Okay. It's a really, obviously, a huge topic that we're not going to be able to make a plan for in 10 minutes. I do have some thoughts, but they are in no way coherent. When people talk about healthcare, I feel really far removed to it from it. I know that healthcare obviously applies to everyone. That's their whole argument. But I actually don't even have a doctor. I really try to steer clear of the entire medical industry as much as I can. I don't take prescription medicines. I know that you guys don't either. It's not the way that we were raised, even though, as you say, Mom, we were raised in a medical family. I it's not that I have a fear of doctors, but the role of a doctor is for you is to make you sick. You go in with symptoms and you come out with a disease. And I'm not sure that that's something that I would want to participate in. I do go to the dentist, and whenever I open my mouth, the doctor always pulls away in horror because there's something weird with my jaw or something like that. And they have been trained, when you see this, that means the fix for this is to break my jaw, have it grow longer while I, you know, eat food through a straw until it no longer looked the way that they have been taught is horrible to look. But meanwhile, I go about my life. If I didn't ever go to the dentist, I would never know that there is something horrible about my mouth. So I don't know. I really try and steer clear of doctors. So my sense of it is not as someone who really participates in healthcare in any real way anyway. My whole purpose is to stay away from doctors as much as I can. But given that, I would say a lot of the healthcare issue comes from the fact that we are a self-improvement culture. And so we always want to be the best that we can be, including fixing or believing that having a disease means that there's something that needs to be fixed, that there it would be better if you didn't have the disease, which isn't necessarily true. I remember some commercial, I think it was even for a health insurance thing, that said, is there a healthy way to be sick? And I think, yes, there is, that just because you have one disease or another, that doesn't mean that you're not a healthy person or that there's something that needs to be attended to, really. It's just the way that you are. I'm not sure that this is making sense. The one thing I would say that we really need to get our heads around is a lot of healthcare is just information. And a lot of the healthcare industry is about rationing information. It's about keeping answers away from people and acting as if doctors or whoever, whatever healthcare practitioners are there, are the gatekeepers of knowledge. And this seems like one of the last things, besides like national security kind of issues, that are held away from people in such a way that you have to go to a healthcare person to get answers. It doesn't make any sense. I know there's WebMD and there's some other things, but there's no real like cultural sense that if you submit your symptoms somewhere, that the larger community could help diagnose you and help give you some suggestions to make you better. You can, I mean, if you have something wrong with you, certainly the internet will give you all sorts of things to be terrified about. But the rationing of information and acting as if people who have had like the training are the only people who could help you, I think is wrong and is causing problems where, as you say, if this person had a line of people who needed their help, why weren't the other people in line helping the people in line too? It's not as if there's only one person who could have helped them.
Yeah, I took a similar sort of view of we don't seem to have that it takes a village sort of mentality anymore. You know how on Mad Men all the ladies like hang out in each other's kitchens during the day and chat? And they'd be like, oh, it's fine. You just need to drink more
walk
milk.
Walk it off.
Yeah, or just walk it off. Things like that.
Walk it off.
Anymore. And I think that we need somebody to check in with. Because I'm very much one of those people who, like on those commercials, you know, the guy who has an arrow sticking out of him. And people in his office keep being like, hey, you should get that checked out. And he's like, no, it's fine. I'm much more of a no, it's fine kind of person, even though the point of that commercial is to go to a doctor. But I recently sort of freaked out and had a panicky thing where in Taekwondo, I hurt my foot, thought it might be broken, and I actually went to the emergency room. And this has given me some insight, I think, into why so many other Americans go to the doctor all the time. And it's that neurotic check-in because you don't feel that the people around you and you yourself don't feel capable of looking out for yourself. When we discussed the show Living Better, Longer Lives, loneliness was defined as having one person who really cares about you, and we found that the average American has 1.5 people who cares about them. So we're all sort of in danger of that. And I think it's better when we have more people around who are sort of doing a check-in. If someone else could be like, no, you're fine. Or if I felt more in my body, I mean, the whole reason why I'm there in Taekwondo class is I feel like all I do is sit at a desk and I'm not aware of my body anymore. I'm not in my body anymore. I don't even feel like myself. So I don't really feel equipped to assess if what's going on with my body is okay anymore. And I'm not around the people who love me and care about me who can check in and say like, no, you're fine. Which is why every time I go home, mom, I point to something and say, is this cancer? I save them all up. And when I go home, I'm like, okay, mom will look at this and tell me if this is cancer, if I have diabetes or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's just in the way we live our lives these days, the people who we go to check in with are often doctors. And at this point, you know, my foot was not broken and I feel embarrassed that I even went and stupid that I even went. But that's, you know, I didn't have anybody to check in with and I didn't trust my perceptions. Now, since then, I have actually hurt the other foot in Taekwondo. I'm pretty sure it is broken because when I move my toes back, the one toe doesn't really come up. But I also know that I've broken my foot before and there's nothing to be done about a broken foot and it's totally fine. I just elevate it and whatever.
Well, that's so, the thing. We don't come with an owner's manual. And we've lost that cultural sense, as you both suggest, that there's a greater knowledge that is shared around, and now it's often called old wives' tales or this or that, but a certain sense of knowing when you're well and when you're not well and what needs to be done to assist in that matter. Modern medicine is very good with the mechanical things. We can fix the broken bones generally. Feet are a slightly different problem. We can put in new hips. We can fix cleft palate. We can do things like that, but in terms of curing disease, we do very little, and we often pills. We are probably quite rare, your father and I specifically in our age group, we don't take pills. We're just not on anything, and people are amazed, and they have all these things to help you manage all your pills and how many you should be taking on this day and that day, and then you have to take pills to manage the unintended but side effects of the pills that you're taking, and they're not really sure whether that's really helping, and it really is kind of a mess. I even had a friend who the regime of pills she was on was so stringent and so difficult to manage because one couldn't be taken within a certain number of hours of another one. She had to wake up every nighttime at 3 a.m. to take another pill, which I can't imagine helped her symptoms at all, as she was constantly worried about waking up to take this pill. It's kind of the system itself in terms of taking care of ourselves is definitely broken, I think.
And doctors love to poo-poo the, what is it called, placebo? You know, the old wives' tale saying, oh, if you put meat on a black guy or whatever, it doesn't work. But after study, a placebo effect is often just as effective as the actual treatment that they're going to give. Right. And so the smartest thing a doctor could do is not poo-poo the placebo effect, is to act as if, yes, of course, put some meat on it and that will make everything better.
Right.
They have fact found that even if you know you're taking a placebo, you still usually get better. Yeah. People just like to like actively doing something.
I think that's like the loneliness thing too. If you feel that there's someone looking out for you, then you are better. You're healthier in the same way that if you feel that someone has given you something to make you feel better, like kissing a boob when you're little, it's the, you know, it helps.
Exactly. And then you have the when you talk about advertising, it's on the other side. There's so much advertising now about pills or diseases. There's this thing out now for shingles. And it's like, it just kind of gets in your head. I wonder how many people are going to end up getting shingles because their mind says, oh my gosh, I'm in that age group and I had chicken pox and I'm going to get shingles, or they're going to think they have shingles. It's one of those things that all this stuff is insidious and just gets in your head. And if there's not an ad telling you about a disease that you may or may not have or could not get, or the pills to take for what you may or may not have, but it's also then all the lawsuits from all the pills that you did take. And it's just sort of a cycle of insanity here that I
think. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Please, Jen.
I was going to say, on the other hand, think of if there was the information out there about, like, if you have a set of symptoms that have been bothering you and you don't know what's wrong with you, if there could be some information out there that would help you know, oh, what it is that I have is this, and what would help me. I know the same. So many people have celiac disease who don't really have celiac disease, or they eat gluten-free meals without actually having celiac disease. But I've heard a lot of stories of people who really do have the disease, and when they figure out what's wrong with them, that they just can't eat gluten, it is amazingly transformative in their lives, because they've just been kind of sickly for a long time, just not feeling that well, whatever the symptoms are. And when they find out that's what it is, that's not an easy fix, but it's also something that's not going to bankrupt you, or, you know, it's something that can make their lives a lot better pretty easily.
Right. Well, and you're right. It goes back to what you were talking about earlier, that there was some sort of informational thing that was not held closely by doctors, so people could get confidence in themselves and the people around them about what are symptoms of a disease and what can I do about it. It would be very helpful.
I don't know why we haven't put the money into developing the infrastructure to share the information about the entire healthcare system. I mean, they act as if it's a privacy concern, but okay, fine. I think that even if things can't be kept completely private, that it's a worthy thing to mix all of our information so we get some idea of what's going on at a larger sense. I think the way the next big healthcare revolution will be when we're conducting studies on the entire human race, basically, of what happens when you stop eating gluten, what happens when you take this medicine, what happens when you take up yoga, what happens when you live on the east coast of Florida, what happens that we could learn so much from that, and that would fill in so many holes that we don't have right now. And we already have the technological infrastructure to be able to do something like that. We just choose not to.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of choosing not to and a lot of guarding the financial security of the whole healthcare bureaucracy.
Yes, and that's the dirty trick of it all.
Yeah, it's like, you know, all these people, I mean, millions of people get their livelihood from this. That's part of the problem. They want you to have to go to doctors and do this and have the tests, et cetera, because that's how they all make their money. The pharmaceutical companies, the insurance companies, the doctors themselves becomes kind of a game that way. Not so much caring for the individual, but making sure that the, once again, a bureaucracy, an institution is saved. That's what they're talking about. And unfortunately, things like Obamacare and things like that, where people are trying to deal with reforming the healthcare system, they just don't go far enough. They don't ask the right questions. They don't really look at things. All they're really doing is making sure that there's money enough in the system, and that's not really a problem, quite honestly. So,
Mommy, you're pounding the table. We could all hear it.
Oh no, was I? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. You're getting worked up.
Well, and is that a surprise? Okay, well, maybe we should move on to a slightly lighter subject. And does anyone have anything else to add in particular? As you say, this is a weighty subject, and we're certainly not going to cover it in these minutes, but I thought we at least needed to make a start on it. Anything else, ladies?
I do have more, but I think it would launch us into it for much longer than we have.
All right. Then we'll. Oh, I just actually got a little signal saying high sound coming from my speakers. So I think it realized I was pounding the table too. Okay. Well, let's go on to our second subject that I named the name game. I think it's so much fun. All the ads on television for Ancestry.com, and your grandmother on your dad's side was so into genealogy and tracing everybody back, and she was able to for most lines, but the male line on your dad's side only went back so far, and then it was a total dead end, and it was interesting. But I love the idea of names, and names have power. And Vietnamese consider names as part of the soul. So you don't say someone's name in anger. They wouldn't say, you know, Jennifer, don't do that. So, you know, in Jewish Orthodoxy, they don't say God's name. They refer to him obliquely. And certainly once a policeman has your name, you're pretty well tagged. Names are very powerful, but then names disappear. Like, as I suggested, Pendragon. Nobody's named Fred Pendragon anymore. And it's like, what happened to those names? So I just wondered what you guys thought, what kind of research you found on all this. Kate, why don't you take it away this time?
Well, it seems to me, from what I've found, that a lot of those names didn't get to breed, or simple things like they had all girls and things.
Right.
So I did like on that one list you sent us, one of the last names was Spinster. And the first thing that came to my mind was, of course, Spinster wasn't passed on.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
It does make very good
sense. You
never
got the chance. There was only one spinster.
That's right. Okay.
End of the line.
End of the line. End of the line. Well, you know,
I thought it was interesting, too, that they said that some names, so the one website that we looked at was about British surnames, and they said that some of them are coming back. They've been extinct in Britain for a long time, and they're coming back as Americans move to England. And so what happened is there are certain types of people left Britain for America, and they all had, or not all of them, but they took with them a certain last name. And now that people are coming back, that last name shows up again.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, which is kind of fun. And on the other side of the immigration, a lot of immigrants came to the United States and anglicized or Americanized, actually, their names, took a lot of the consonants out at the end and made them very much simpler, like the patronymic in Russia. where they're the son of, you know, Alexandrovich, and they take off things like that to make it just Alexander. So the immigration works both ways of changing, of bringing new life and then making something disappear. They also talked about sometimes names changed because of slang, where a name became less than proper because of what that word sort of became. And I'm almost embarrassed to say a few of them, like, because of that. And I thought,
I know,
that
an Osman.
Osman? Yes, exactly. Yeah. There was a thing in the UK from the 2011 UK census that under 20 people have the name, last name Fallow, Fernsby, Dankworth, Birdwhistle, Berrycloth, and Culpepper. And those are some fun names. And under two.
And I thought it was interesting because one of my main guys, healthcare wise, is Nicholas Culpepper. It was the herbalist back in the day, 17th century fella. So I thought it was funny that along with our healthcare discussions that Culpepper is going out of use.
Out of use. I know, I was a little surprised at that one. But, you know, they talk about like World War One, the Napoleonic Wars and World War One, both whole generations of young males were killed off. So names lost their way with that because the names in at that time went with the men. China, though, names went with the mom. The word for surname, actually, interestingly enough, is two symbols, one meaning woman and one meaning giving birth. So it went through a matriarchal cycle there, which is interesting. And they have far fewer surnames in general than Western cultures do. Their most populous is Chang. Over 100 million people have that particular last name, with Wang and Li coming in after that.
Wow, 100 million.
Yeah. Yeah, can you imagine looking that up in a phone book?
Yeah, it starts to take away the purpose of a surname at that point. Yeah. You know, you think there are 100 million Jens, and so I need a last name to distinguish me. But if there are 100 million of my last name, then I'm no longer being distinguished.
Yeah. Right. Well, I actually watched, in preparation for this, a Cracked.com video. Do you know their Stuff That Must Have Happened series? Yeah. It was about the invention of surnames, and there are just too many Stevens and Johns, and they're trying to get through a town meeting, and everyone's like, what? No, I didn't. And so they're like, okay, this is what I'm here to talk about. We have to give you a second name too. And it sort of went through the different types of surnames that there are. And I like it. It's the so-and-so's son or kin. Then the surnames that are what you do, like a Miller or a Wright or a Cooper. Just picking a color, green, Schwartz, Blanco, you have that in pretty much every language. But my favorite are the descriptive things, particularly the British descriptive names, like Side Bottom. it just seems like one of those things that someone didn't choose for themselves.
Yeah.
But
yes.
It was pinned on them of, yes, you will be Cecily Side Bottom.
And so will your children.
So will your children.
Well, it's kind of fun in a way. I mean, awful for the person. It's the kind of name where you have a name that you get stuck in a locker at school because they're making fun of you and they do things like that. To have your last name be the same is difficult too, and to have it passed on to your children and know that they too will suffer that ignominy. But it is fun. I love names, and I love talking about names, and not just the current new baby names that are coming out. I don't know if you by any chance just happen to come across a list of that, but yikes, some of the names they're starting to name the children are a little distressing. But anyway.
But again, that's people trying to distinguish their child.
Yeah.
And I do get that. I do understand why, because I do this all the time. Whenever I meet somebody named, like, Cassandra, It's like, oh my God, why did your mother name you such an ill-fated thing?
Yeah.
And so many of the names, they're already tainted by other stories or mythology. And it's like, all right, how about baby hashtag?
I can see some geek family doing that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. A little hashtag.
Right.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
Baby hashtag.
But anyway, names are fun, and names can be magical, and names can be awful. I just thought that would be a fun thing. Well, you ready to go on to the third topic, ladies?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to take that as a yes. Famous quote. This is just plain fun for me. You know, I like to collect quotes. I have books and pages of things. And I wanted, all of a sudden it occurred to me, I don't necessarily know what your favorite quotes are and why they're your favorite, so I'd like to see what you have. And Jen, let's go with you this time.
Okay, well, the first thing that popped into my mind when I saw this was actually a bumper sticker, so I'm not even sure who said it, but it's, "I'm pro-life jacket and I boat." And it makes me laugh every time. It's obviously a play on "I'm pro-life and I vote."
Yeah.
But of course, "I'm pro-life jacket and I vote." There's just no explanation needed. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But if I'm really looking for quotes, Oscar Wilde is the guy I turn to. My favorites from him are, "Always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much."
That's great.
Also, "True friends stab you in the front." Also, "A gentleman is one who never hurts anyone's feelings unintentionally."
That's right. You can't beat Oscar Wilde, I have to say. He's the best.
He's great. And I have more, but I won't steal them all, so I'll let you guys go.
Okay.
I only have his final words written down, which were, "Either that wallpaper goes or I do."
We would have been best friends.
Oh, I know. Where is Oscar Wilde when you need him? Golly gee.
There's that book that he wrote, the one with the painting. I can't remember
Dorian
the name.
Dorian Gray?
Yes. And so there's the whole Dorian Gray thing going on, but then there's that friend of his who's clearly the, like, Oscar Wilde character that's in everything, and everything that comes out of that man's mouth is gold.
It's gold, yeah, I know.
And I just want him to be real so he could be my best friend.
Yeah, we do need Oscar Wilde. He's got to come back to us. Well, I have lots and lots of my favorite kinds of things. You guys know the euphonious ones like "Gash Gold Vermilion" that you've heard since you were born, which is from Gerard Manley Hopkins' Windhover. I just like the sound of it. And "Gabble Ratchet," which comes from "Beowulf," which means a cry of like hounds that are heard at night that's supposed to be kind of eerie. And
we get "Gabble Ratchet" around here.
Yes, you do. You certainly do. And the third was "Liquefaction," Robert Herrick's "Upon Julia's Clothes." "When as in silks my Julia goes, then methinks how sweetly flows that liquefaction of her clothes." And that word "liquefaction" is just gorgeous. And I've got a lot of... All right, Jen, you go on with a few then. Apparently we all have lots.
Okay, my next favorite after Oscar Wilde is Mark Twain when I look for quotes.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got, "Suppose you were an idiot, suppose you were a member of Congress." But I repeat myself.
Which
is particularly apropos now, but obviously it must have been apropos in his time as well.
Absolutely.
"Whenever you find yourself on the side of the majority, it is time to pause and reflect." Not necessarily hilarious, but definitely true.
Yeah.
And then for particularly appropriate for this episode, "Be careful of reading health books. You may die of a misprint."
Wonderful. All right, Kate, do you have a few more?
I do, but all of my things come from funny movies.
That's great.
All my Airplane and Anchorman, and my favorite, though, is from Wedding Crashers. And it is when Vince Vaughn says, "The painting was a gift, Todd. I'm taking it with me." I don't know why that tickles me so much, but every time I hear it, I just can't stop laughing.
Well, that's good. What else have you got?
This is when the senator's son has painted a nude of Vince Vaughn, and at the end, when they have been found out, Todd says, "I want my painting back." And that's what Vince Vaughn responds, which I think is wonderful.
It is wonderful. You got another one?
Well, from Anchorman, "I immediately regret this decision," which I find myself saying more often than you'd think.
Or that you would really like to have happen.
Oh, I immediately regret this decision.
Well, I've actually heard it on Glee, but apparently it's from an Adele song called "Rolling in the Deep," and I just like the term for what it suggests. "Throw your soul through every open door." I really like that idea. Not funny, but it's just that sense of, you know, throwing yourself into life, throwing yourself into everything as hard as you can. Something that I certainly tried to inculcate into you guys a little bit, but I thought that was a lovely thing. And one of my favorite quotes also kind of along that line is from Lincoln's 1862 speech to Congress, which was a month or so before he did his Emancipation Proclamation. And it goes like this. The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. As our case is new, so must we think anew and act anew. We must disenthrall ourselves, and then we shall gain our country. So I like that term, disenthrall ourselves. I like the idea that, as Mark Twain was suggesting, if you're thinking like the majority, it's time to stop and perhaps look around again. And we do tend to become enthralled with certain ideals or points of view. Oh, there's the gavel ratchet.
Yeah, there's some gavel ratchet happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
The beasties are restless.
The beasties are restless. Yay, team. I miss the beasties. So any other ones?
Yes. One that I find myself thinking of frequently in the morning is from a John Donne poem where he is really upset with the sun rising and says, well, there's, I can start at the beginning. Busy old fool, unruly sun, why dost thou thus through windows and through curtains call on us? Saucy pedantic wretch, go chide late schoolboys and sour apprentices. And I usually find myself thinking later on in the morning when I actually have my faculties about me, not for the first couple hours I've been awake, but saucy pedantic wretch, go chide late schoolboys. Usually I'm murmuring that under my breath.
To the sun. That's pretty funny.
That is a good one. What about you, Jen? Any last quotes?
Okay, so if we're going to talk about music, I have You Can't Make a Hoe a Housewife from Dr. Dre, and Mo Money, Mo Problems, I consistently find myself saying. So yeah, basically I want to go out with Mo Money, Mo Problems.
Okay. All right, I think that's a good one to end on. I'm with you. Well, let's turn now to our enrichments and our enragements. So, Kate, are you enriched today or are you enraged?
Oh, I am enraged.
Uh-oh.
At the sun?
Yeah.
No, not at the sun.
Okay.
At people who read critiques of movies prior to seeing them and then take the critic's word as gospel.
Oh, be careful. That's what your dad
does. I know, because Dad's that way. When Dad listens to this, he should just cover his ears. But okay. I saw the movie Zero Dark Thirty, and I thought it was an excellent film. Very, very well done all the way around. And as our listeners know, I am very much opposed to the assassination of Osama bin Laden and found that whole situation wildly upsetting. And it was for this reason that many of my friends were surprised that I wanted to go, but it is actually for this reason that I needed to go. And I wanted to know some version of what happened there. And I was thrilled to see that the movie was done with a deft hand. It was not heavy-handed or preachy, and I thought it was pretty masterfully put together film that brought to mind Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange and how it led you through its story. And you were sort of coming to your own conclusions along the way and sort of surprised at where you progressed along that path. But that's not really my point. My point is that after I saw Zero Dark Thirty, I have been yelled at and berated by people who really don't even know me very well, because those people say the movie is so horrible because they read critiques of it. Now, usually I'd be fine with yelling at someone over a movie, although these people really don't know me very well, anybody who's gotten ugly with me. But it's when you've seen the movie that then you can have a real conversation about it. But this is just people berating me, and they haven't even seen the movie. They should see the movie before they yell.
Why are they mad? I don't get it.
Well, apparently this director has no moral compass, that this is just sensationalism. And I don't know. I just think that if any of these people had actually seen the damn movie, they wouldn't say any of the stuff that they were saying. But they're like, oh, well, I read this article. And it's like, oh, I went and saw the movie last night. Shut your damn mouth.
You are enraged, Kate.
I'm super enraged. How inappropriate is it for someone who barely knows me to go off on me when they haven't even seen the source material?
I agree.
Good Lord.
It's sort of silly to even engage in that sort of conversation when you haven't seen the original, just basing it on someone else's take on it. I agree.
Particularly when I suspect that both of these people just skimmed the articles. So you didn't really even read the secondary sources.
So, Kate, are these people going to know who they are when they hear this? Don't care. Okay. All right. Hyde, how about you? Are you enriched or enraged today?
I am enriched. Whenever Marco goes out of town, I usually spend vast quantities of time watching YouTube. Sometimes this goes well and sometimes it does not. But last time it went very well because I discovered something called acro yoga, which is basically partner yoga, but what's usually the female partner just basically never touches the ground the whole time. It looks like a lot of fun, and if you do yoga or want to do partner yoga, you should definitely check out acro yoga on YouTube. If you are completely uninterested in ever doing yoga, you should still check out acro yoga, and it's acro as an acrobat,
right.
A-C-R-O. You should definitely still check it out because the photos online, if you just do like a Google image search, are very pretty. They're super interesting just to see the formation that two humans can put themselves into. It's worth a quick Google search. And after the taping of this, I am going to go do some acro yoga with Marco.
Cool.
Oh, that'll be fun. That'll be interesting. You should probably tape that so we can see what you guys are doing.
Yes, I will put the best video as a URL on our WholeShebangPodcast.com website.
Perfect. Great idea. That'd be fun. So this is not the kind of yoga where you're suspended by things. This is the female partner is just in the air based on being on top of her partner. Is that what we're
suggesting? So usually it can be of any gender, but the ones I'm most interested in have the man on his back and his legs are up like in an L shape. And so she does a lot of stuff on the bottoms of his feet. So and like, then she can move around to a new position because he can put his arms up and so she can reorganize herself. And you can actually get people spinning around. Like she can really be like doing circles in the air, kind of like swing dancing kind of moves, I would say.
Yeah.
Except it's all with him down on the ground. It's very cool. I think you should look at it.
So this is like Flying Baby is what you're telling me?
It's Flying Baby. It's totally Flying Baby. Yeah.
Oh, this is so fun.
The girl's number one responsibility is to not drool.
Yeah, that could be bad. That could ruin the whole thing.
Bad.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be so easy to do that. They're up there for a long time.
All right. Well, I can't wait to see this, Jen. This sounds like a lot of fun. Something different for your Sunday afternoon.
Exactly. I may have to engage a healthcare professional afterwards.
Because they're good with the mechanics. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Mom, are you enriched or enraged?
I am enriched. And it's so funny because it's YouTube also. This is so funny. This is actually a YouTube video that Caitlin sent me talking about Ben Aaron, who is a gentleman who seems to be in his 30s or something, who's an NBC lifestyle editor kind of guy and goes out and does interesting things. And he has this one hysterically funny video about dance walking. And it's walking in down Fifth Avenue to music and bouncing around. And this guy is so funny. Oh my gosh. Not only in his demeanor and what he says and how he says it, but in the way he moves. It is hysterical. And I've watched it a million times because it just makes me laugh and laugh and laugh. And I keep wanting that Carvana mystery guy to get on with his technology so I could throw up Christopher Walken tripping the light fantastic to that Fat Boy Slim song and then have Ben Aaron on the other side doing his dance walking on Fifth Avenue and things. It's a hoot. It's worth watching because it's just, he really is a very funny man. I'm enriched by YouTube. Isn't that funny? Well, ladies, that seems to be our show. Thank you, listeners, for listening in. And I just want to remind everybody to go to our website, WholeShebangPodcast.com, because aside from all the links to a lot of the things that we talked about today, and certainly to see Jen and Marco do acro yoga, we have polls to take and discussions on entertainment. You can even get a Whole Shebang t-shirt, which I got for everybody for Christmas, and they turned out really well. So give it a try. That's our edition for today. Thank you for listening.
A do ba do 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 ba do ba do do ba.